This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The international break begins, but we keep delivering. England have qualified, so we'll do some who should be on that plane chat. Jazz singer Cole Palmer, is he the heir apparent for the 10 shirt if Bellingham isn't fit and if Maddison isn't fit? Should Raheem Sterling just book another plane to somewhere else? Big week for Wales, two wins, and they're there while Scotland are on the brackets good beach and Northern Ireland and the Republic are on the brackets bad one. Then there's CEO news from Manchester United. When did we start to care about the name of any club CEO? It's not Richard Arnold, as United beam up Patrick Stewart. There's some more news about Chelsea's finances under Abramovich, which leads to a nice hypothetical discussion about stripping clubs of titles and if that would make any difference. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, live in person in Manchester, Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hello, Max.
How are you?
I'm very well, yeah. We did a good live show.
It's not for us to say if it was good, I guess, is it?
We've done three now, yeah. London, Bristol, Manchester, and nothing has gone horrifically wrong yet.
That is true. Also on stage and with us, John Bruin, welcome.
Hi, Max.
And Nader Manuha, your first live show.
Yes, my first live show.
Do you think if we asked you to do another one, you would say yes?
I would. It was easy enough. Crowd was very keen to engage. So it was good.
Friendly
fun,
crowd.
Yeah, very friendly.
There was a few musical numbers. If we'd known you played slap bass guitar, that would have been next time. Will you bring your bass guitar?
We'll see. Okay. We'll see how the world is at that moment.
In a new metal style, is that what you're promising?
Not quite, no, but if you want to see what type of style I was trying to go for, someone YouTube or Google Primus.
Right. Linvoy Primus.
Linvoy.
Big Linvoy.
What a bass player he was.
That's what we're talking about.
Les Claypool. That's the bassist in Primus.
Yeah, and he's very, very good.
Okay.
Not to be confused with Timothy Claypool.
Right. I don't know who that is.
He's the ghost from Rent-A-Ghost.
Is that the ghost from Rent-A-Ghost?
Or the jester. Yeah.
Okay. Right, sneeze and a donkey appears. That's what I remember. Anyway, England, all Barry wanted was you to play the Seinfeld theme. In between jokes. England-Malta on Friday night, and then they go to North Macedonia on Monday night. They've qualified already, so I guess it doesn't matter. Cole Palmer drafted into the squad. What have you made, Nadim, of sort of Cole Palmer? Like this move from City, where you all... Obviously, you're going to be good if you're in City's 25, right? You're not going to be a bad footballer, but I don't think we realised he was as good as we think he is now after watching him play twice.
Yeah, so I'll be completely like honest with you. When he was at City, I'd heard he was a very, very good player and so on, but I never thought like try and get him to play instead of someone else, because they had Mahrez, had Foden, had Grealish, had all these types of players. And like, he was, it's good. Cole's going to come on for 15, 20 minutes at the end. But he's, you know, he's a good player. So then when you hear that Chelsea are trying to buy him and it's £42.5 million for someone that doesn't ever really start for the club, you're like, well, fair enough. Good luck to him. Wish him all the best. It's an interesting transfer by Chelsea, especially with the amount of players he already had there. But then he goes down and he's like showing his actual ability, his potential should be starting week in, week out. But again, how many people from a City persuasion would have said, yeah, Cole Palmer needs to be starting? For the answer is probably not many. But this is who he is. I think when he won the 21 Euros in the summer, I think he was one of their best players. There was lots of discussions about how good he was. Julian Lescott, a friend of mine, coached him. He said he's like top tier. I was like, maybe, you know, but obviously he sees him more. So I said, all right, fair enough. Goes to Chelsea. All of a sudden, he's not the academy graduate anymore. He's a £42.5 million signing with a 15-year deal there. So he's, you know, he's very much attached to the football club. And he's confident. The way he played in the City game in particular, he has a belief in himself. He was getting involved in jokes and, you know, celebrating. Like, he's enjoying that moment. And that's the freedom you can get sometimes by removing that sort of tag of being just an academy graduate. And you can see he's playing to his best. And somehow he's taking penalties over Sterling and stuff, which is still to this day blowing my mind.
Yeah, I don't think I wouldn't fancy Sterling on a penalty.
You say this.
Has he got a good record?
No, he's not actually, but... Just when he was at City, I'd seen Sterling take a penalty. Yeah. I'd seen everyone take a penalty. Yeah. But I'd never seen Cole Palmer even be near enough to even like ask, can I take a penalty? Yeah. But instead, he's saying to Raheem, "Yo, little boy, just wait there. I'm going to take this."
Yeah.
And that's what really, that's the thing that's confusing me, because that's his senior pro for many years, just taking a back seat as he lets him take the pen.
Yeah. I suppose the thing at City, Bruin, is that he'd never play in the 10, right? City would play him wide, and he's not, that's a different skill.
Yes, Rushton.
Sorry. Yeah. Do you know, as soon as I said it, I know you don't like that. Yeah. Wilson doesn't mind. Sorry, John. My apologies.
I'm not at school anymore. No.
Give me your homework.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in Manchester City's structure, Pep likes to put the skillful players who aren't Kevin De Bruyne to the flank, and then they do their work coming, cutting inside. And like Nadim, I saw Cole Palmer play. I think he started in the final game of last season at Brentford. City lost. To see that player compared to the swaggering, and he's all Mank, isn't he? He's Withenshaw lad.
Yeah.
And after the matches, you know, he's got that sort of Mank drawl. He's got the hairstyle of a indie landfill star, of which we are, you know, close personal friends these days.
Yeah, of course.
And he is. As Nadim said, he's seizing his moment. And like, even in the post-match, you know, when he was digging out Nicholas Jackson after the Spurs game, you know, saying, "Oh, he needs to train harder," and stuff like that. He's obviously a character. Now, him being a character might be the reason why he is no longer Manchester City. There is room for only one character there. I remember Jack Grealish used to be a character and is now... like a sort of pet for Pep Guardiola. And maybe Cole, you know, the swaggering Mank, maybe doesn't fit in with a Pep Guardiola. But in London, he can be, you know.
Bright lights.
Bright lights, the London, fashionable, yeah. Kings Ben Road, me, yeah. Swagger.
Go out with Ben Me.
Yeah, see it now, yeah.
Are you more or less nervous about England winning the Euros now that Cole Palmer is the third choice 10?
I am quite nervous about them winning the Euros. I mean, some very good players are going to be left out of that squad, and there'll be the usual wailing and gnashing of teeth. I think after his performance against Tottenham, everyone's saying, "Oh, how can Raheem Sterling be left out of the squad?" And it looks like he will probably be left out of the squad unless there's a raft of injuries. But if you want to put Sterling in, who do you leave out? You're going to leave out someone whose omission will prompt wailing and gnashing of teeth. So yeah, I am quite nervous. My main hope is that Gareth Southgate will stymie them, as he has done on two occasions previously. Other opinions are available. I don't think he's a very good manager. I used to think he was a good politician, a good statesman type figure, but I don't think he's a good football manager. But other people disagree. But I'm firmly in the camp that he is holding the England squad back.
Are you in that camp, Nadim?
I'm not actually, no. As I think through my lifetime, which England managers of the past would be able to have won something with this England side, would you say?
Bobby Robson.
Do you think? Venables?
Terry, yeah.
Venables the most tactically astute, wasn't he?
He studied, you know, patterns of play around the world. You know, did his homework. Was a success in Spain. You know, could adapt. I mean, Venables was like a once in a lifetime English coach.
Yeah, but then with Venables and his traits, do you think the team would have been informed the way that it is, with people getting the opportunity from probably a year, 2 years sooner than say other people would have?
Are you saying that they still had to drink down Scribes West to get a game?
You could say that. I think. For whatever issues people have with, say, Southgate's coach, and I think the team that he's formed is one which likely wouldn't have been formed by other managers, because there's even like Cole Palmer getting a chance. There was once a point where if someone drops out of the main squad, you'd go into a standby. You wouldn't go to the 21s. And I think there've been people across the years who've had the chance to play and gotten a little taste of it from, say, sooner than they would have done otherwise. Because I think as we look back, we kind of knew years ago, you knew what the England starting 11 was. And then you had a whole bunch of players who were really good who might never get the opportunity to play in the squads. And a whole bunch of people who were younger who would never get the opportunity because someone's already on the bench that's covering for someone else who's going to start every game. So I think there's something about him. And I think the team is good. And I think he's given something to the team, even if it's just psychological, to make them believe that they can do it. And I think that's something which a lot of England teams, in my opinion, haven't had.
I'm in the pro Southgate camp. I mean, I'm not as pro as I was. Don't know why, but I am in the pro. And he, you know, he is more successful than anyone since Ralph Ramsey.
That's a really bogus argument.
Do you think it is?
Because the players,
yeah, but the players have been good before.
Not this good. Like such an even spread.
But you say it's not even spread. Like defensively, it's not amazing, is it? Really? Like our centre backs aren't like the best in the world.
Yeah, it's not Toews Ferdinands and Campbell's, all that stuff, is it?
Well, I'm only going on the evidence of what I've seen with my own eyes in the game that they lost against Croatia. They threw it away. And the game against Italy, they threw it away. They are both games England should have won.
The game against France, they threw it away.
Yeah.
The Italy one, for me, it's as we get further away
that's
from
three
it.
Times,
I remember. Obviously, they lost, but they lost on penalties. Yeah. You know, for as bad as they were, they still had a chance to win the whole thing. So, if they would have won the whole thing, would we have said, "Oh, they were so bad in the final," though, or is it just a case that they won? Like even the
well,
last.
It shouldn't
World
have
Cup,
gone to penalties. That's my argument. In a
final against Italy, there's every chance. How many like finals are just complete blowouts?
But you go a goal up, and then you. You've got your. They're playing really badly. You've a chance to put the game to bed, and what do you do? Oh, let's just. Sit
isn't
back
that, well, so how do we describe like, Argentina then in that World Cup final when they had the lead? And before you know it, France are right there with them. Was it like the last 15 minutes when Mbappe scored a couple to take it to extra time? Was it?
Yeah,
that's what I mean. So did Argentina blow that one, or did they just win the World Cup?
They won the World Cup.
I know, but they blew it then because they didn't. Need, should never have gone to penalties when they were that dominant. Should never have gone to penalties then.
Yeah, but they won the penalty shootout.
So that's what you see we're going with this. So is it about England's penalty taking or is it about England's performance in the final?
I think it was about their performance in the final. I think they had Italy at their mercy and they let them off the hook. And that's all down to Southgate. That, you know.
No, but Nathan makes a good point because they blew it, Argentina, because it was they were taking the penalty. They just happened to win the shootout.
But you're making it sound like winning that hoary old saw that a penalty shootout is a lottery. It isn't.
As Gareth should know.
Yes.
from previous experience. I think with Southgate is what it has managed to do, and I don't know if this will last forever and manage to have a shelf life, which may be the problem that we might run into at this point, is he made the England players feel like they weren't England players, which is in a big tournament, in a big game, they're playing well and they see it all the way through as they did against Germany, say in the Euros. And then in that final, when we it was three watched it together, they suddenly became England again. Mm. Remember this? We discussed this at the time, which is suddenly they start hoofing the ball long. They panic when they're in possession in a way they hadn't done before. And that was what Southgate managed to convince that team to be greater than the sum of their parts. But in that game against Croatia, the France game, and suddenly there's that point where we're English, this could actually happen. Oh no. And that's when English doubts crept in, and that's the thing that Southgate hasn't conquered.
If you take each tournament individually, you could say, yeah, England did well.
Yeah.
But he's had his three chances now. Yeah. There's a bit of a pattern
there
emerging.
There is no one else to give a chance to, though. Is there? I mean, who does it go to?
Well, the job.
Yeah.
I want Southgate to keep it.
do you not think as well, though, with these tournaments, we're looking at it obviously from a very like English lens as such, but there have been other teams within that same three tournament cycle who've really struggled, but it's like we don't take them into account because all we see is their name once it's like time for tournament time. You know what I mean? Like, how well have Spain done? You know, we could talk about,
but
say,
they
Germany.
Qualified for...
Exactly. For the last two World Cups, isn't it? So there's more to it. There are lots of nations who... are in a worse position than England, but it feels like England are in a worse position because they've not maximised their potential.
Does it not feel, though, that the best team in Europe is France?
Yeah.
By a long, long way. And then the second best is probably England.
Yeah, I think.
And then Spain is not Spain as we recall it.
No.
Germany isn't.
Germany
are at home, so I suppose that's a positive. They can't be horrendous.
But... I mean, they were bad before the World Cup in 2006 and then discovered... a load of players that you've probably forgotten now. And
I
mean, then
I couldn't name one that was, I can't even, yeah.
Well, Lukas Podolski.
Yeah,
but they came third in that tournament and they were surprised. I mean, Germany being at home, I think that'd be good for them. But they're not a great team. I mean, in Barry's, I think what Barry's saying is that England should be good enough to win this, but this manager's holding him back. Is that what you're thinking? Or you just don't want to ever think that England might win anything?
No, I think they are good enough to win it. But I do think if they don't win it, it'll probably be down to Southgate's excessive caution.
Yeah. I think the thing I think is it's much easier to be in that position because the chance of winning any individual tournament, so the only way you are wrong is if England win it, which is very unlikely. So
I don't think it is very unlikely.
Anyway, we'll find out. Italy face North Macedonia in the same group. If they win, then there's a big game. Ukraine, Italy, winner takes all on Monday. Wales go to Armenia on Saturday, Turkey on Tuesday. We are all hoping for a jubilant, hungover Ellis James voice note. And Baz, you've been listening to one of Ellis's podcasts to get some thoughts. I mean, presumably his football one. Or you're going to tell us about the Napoleonic Wars or something?
No, he and Robbie Earnshaw and Ian Roberts were discussing the games. Obviously, they're both huge games. They have to beat Armenia. And if they beat Armenia, that's away. Then they have Turkey at home. And so they have to win both games. I mean, Robert Page's goose looked cooked there for a while, but they pulled two brilliant wins out of the bag against Latvia and Croatia. I don't think anyone saw them beating Croatia. And I think the lads were discussing, basically they were having a debate, should Brennan Johnson start for Wales or not? You would imagine he would be a first choice for one of the first names down the team sheet, but he didn't start against Croatia. So do you fix it? Do you tinker with a winning team or not? So it's between him, Brooks, Kiefer Moore and
Harry Wilson.
Yeah, one of those will miss out, basically.
Harry Wilson was brilliant against Croatia, scored two great goals. I've watched a bit of Wales over this qualifying campaign. They've got this guy, Jordan James, plays for Birmingham City, 19, replaced Jude Bellingham, pretty much. And he looks the business, really does. Him against Modric, and he came out the better.
Yeah, he and Ampadu are...
Well, Ampadu is the player that we don't know how old he is because he's been around for so long.
Yeah. But he's still on.
He's about 23.
Scotland go to Georgia today, Norway on Sunday. Doesn't matter. They've qualified.
Matters a little bit because they've lost three games in a row. And now, there were only friendlies, and there were friendlies against big opposition in France, England and Spain. But you don't want to get in a losing habit. And they've done so
well.
Spain
wasn't a friendly, was it? I mean, it was.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Spain wasn't a friendly. France and England were. But, yeah. They don't need to win. It would be good for them to get another win on the board. Just get back to winning ways.
I was going to say, they could just warm up to go out in a group stage, can't they? That's the...
This could be their. This could be their time. They've never been out of a group, ever, have they?
Never.
Oh, that'd be great if they managed it, you know. And in these Euros, you can come bottom of your group, as far as I can tell, and still get through. You can get no points and still get through.
Not getting out of the group stage this time will be...
Yeah, it's actually hard.
Yeah.
Everything will be pretty much sorted, won't it, over the next few days. We will explain what happens as and when it happens. Israel played Switzerland last night. It was played at the Puskas Arena in Hungary. It was a 1-1 draw, which means Switzerland and Romania stay top with 16 points. Israel are third with 12. They play Romania on Saturday. Switzerland play Romania on Tuesday. Any of those three teams could go through. Just on the subject of Israel, we've had lots of good and interesting questions about Israel and Gaza, including players posting on social media about it. We've had, we've of course done loads of podcasts on human rights in lots of other places. We're not ignoring these questions and we want to do that properly. And I think we could be forgiven for saying we're not exactly sure how to do that properly, but we are working out the best way to do it. And we will cover that in detail soon. And that'll do for part one. We'll be back in a second talking about CEOs at Manchester United.
God.
Hi Pod fans, Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Owen says, hi, Max. Toenail here from Dublin. I've purchased tickets for Dublin for my brother's 27th birthday. My brother Sludge. Sludge and Toenail. So I don't think I can do it justice to be the great unveiler of such a gift in comparison to you and Barry. Could you let Sludge know to meet me at Toner's Bar at 5 p.m. that Thursday evening? We're not doing it on a Thursday.
Monday or Tuesday.
All those names, have I been Urban Dictionary? Do I need to check what Sludge and Toenail is? Could somebody check what Sludge and Toenail is? Anyway, have fun on Thursday, but we won't be there. But we'll be there on Monday. Ashling says, hi, folks. Ashling here. I have my tickets bought for Dublin on the 21st. And while I'm looking forward to it, I hope it was an unintentional oversight. It coincides with a landmark event in Irish football history. The hotly anticipated friendly between the Republic of Ireland and New Zealand promises to be a pulsating encounter and will almost inevitably be Stephen Kenny's last match in charge of the boys in green. Will there be a big screen to watch the drama unfold? Barry, how will you concentrate knowing your boys in green are playing the All Whites?
Yeah, up against the mighty Chris Wood, I presume he'll be playing, will he? I think he's the only New Zealand player I know.
Is Ryan Nelson still kicking about? Is he playing? We have quite a big audience in New Zealand. get upset about this. Sorry about that. Crowded House, they're actually Kiwis, aren't they?
Split ends before that.
Yeah, split ends, like the Concords. I sat on a train with them for 4 hours stuck outside Stevenage before they were famous, but obviously very recognisable faces and they had guitars, but I didn't chat to them. Anyway, apologies for that terrible review of New Zealand football. How are you feeling about the Republic, Barry?
Oh, just indifferent. I mean, they have a qualifier against the Netherlands before that in Amsterdam, and they find themselves in the weird position that it is of more benefit to the Republic of Ireland to lose that game than to get a result due to a sort of kink in the Nations League backdoor qualifying situation. So I was glad when Stephen Kenny got the Ireland job. I think it hasn't gone well for him. His contract's up once European qualifying ends. And it almost certainly won't be renewed. He had a goal. Didn't go well for me. Only 6 competitive wins, and they were against Azerbaijan, Luxembourg, Scotland, Armenia, and Gibraltar by 2. Not Europe's elite by any stretch of the imagination. So yeah, if they need to lose against the Netherlands,
which isn't within their power,
I think I think Stephen Kenny can manage that. Lose away to the Netherlands, and then they have a very, very slim hope of getting into the Nations League qualifiers, and even in the unlikely event that happens.
So they need to lose to have a chance to get through.
Yeah, yeah.
And the manager and the players know this.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they're sending a team over to the Netherlands.
You've got to send a team, haven't you? Otherwise, it would look really obvious.
How does that work? What is actually a benefit to losing?
Shouldn't work. It shouldn't be the case, but it has been flagged up to UEFA, and apparently they're sort of big shoulder shrug. Get Jonathan Wilson's shoulder shrug emoji out. They don't seem to care. But yeah, they need as many teams above them in the Nations League rankings to qualify through the usual channels to improve their chances of getting into the qualifiers, and the Netherlands are one of those teams.
And have they just called up like a regular Ireland squad, or is it
that's not a bad idea if you want to lose a football match.
Barry's got the call, yeah. But
I'm saying, if you need to lose a game and the other ones are friendly, why would you call up some of the regulars that didn't give you the opportunity to qualify outright?
What choice have they got, I guess? You know, it's not a sort of...
I'm hugely confident that a full-strength Ireland team can lose against the Netherlands.
What if they don't? That's the thing.
I mean, even if they do lose, it's a pretty slim...
Yeah. Art says, thoughts on Patrick Stewart in to replace Richard Arnold. It's a strange move, but as he captained the Federation starship USS Enterprise, he probably has more experience than the last two. Shame Spock is already gone. Would have loved him to grow our intergalactic fan base. Yeah, we've signed a new hyperspace partner. Richard Arnold is leaving Man United as chief executive. This is all around Jim Ratcliffe getting control of the footballing operations. Arnold's been there since 2007. He was commercial director and then group managing director. And then when Ed Woodward left, he got this job. He said, "It's been an incredible privilege to serve this great football club for the past 16 years through highs and lows." I would say lows.
That's a lot of
through
lows.
"The constant has been the dedication of our employees and fans. I'd like to thank them all for their loyalty and commitment. Wish everyone associated with the club the very best for the future." Patrick Stewart said, "Nanu, nanu, to infinity and beyond." I'm not a Star Trek fan.
Naked soul.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Mork and Mindy.
And I can't remember what's the other one. Buzz Lightyear.
Buzz Lightyear.
Anyway, he said, "Together with my leadership team colleagues, my job will be to ensure the club's foundations remain stable while we embrace changes that can make us stronger over the long term, on and off the pitch, and to support the search for a new permanent CEO." Does any of it matter,
John? That's really made me feel empowered as a true red. The new dawn approaches, doesn't it?
Does it matter? Like, why do we care about who the CEO? I mean, it obviously matters having a good CEO, but why are we talking about this?
Well, I think, funny enough, Manchester United have shown over the last decade the importance of a good CEO or a bad CEO. Mm. Now, Ed Woodward has his defenders in terms of commercial performance, and I'm sure Richard Arnold does too, but United over the last 10 years has been little short of disastrous, and Richard Arnold's rather short reign, which is curtailed, you'd have to say, does involve some rather wrong turns from the club, including the Mason Greenwood affair, in which Richard Arnold played a leading role, and Big Sir Jim Ratcliffe, or is it Sir Big Jim?
We don't know.
Is it Sir Big Jim?
Sir Big Jim.
Sir Big, Big Jim. Sir Jim. Sir Big Jim.
It was Major Sir Tom, wasn't it? So would it be?
Well, wasn't it Captain Tom?
Or Captain Sir Tom.
I don't know. Yeah. I know that his daughter isn't allowed a spa in her garden. It's a great shame.
Let's not
us.
Compare Big Sir Jim with Captain Tom yet.
Okay, fine.
But
Major Tom was a boy.
It was, yeah. Right, it was, yeah.
Crowd control.
Can you hear me, Big Sir Jim?
Yeah.
So anyway, Big Sir Jim, Sir Big Jim, has clearly, and I don't know how he's come to this impression, not been impressed with the performance of Richard Arnold and the on-field performance. I suppose the next question, and we are told actually that Big Sir Jim is a fan of Erik ten Hag, but how long does that last? Because as we all know, when a club changes ownership, one of the first people to go out the door normally is the manager. We've seen that at Birmingham City, rather disastrously so far with Wayne Rooney, and loads of examples of that. But yeah, Arnold stepping aside, this was, we go back to the discussion Barney had with an operator from the club a few weeks back. I think a few people are trying to protect their position at that club, protect their jobs. Richard Arnold hasn't been able to do that. He's moving on. I'm sure he will do okay out of it. I don't think we need to worry about him financially. And he'll probably pick up a perfectly good job without the pressure of being CEO of Manchester United, of which you would suggest there can't be many more high-pressure jobs than that.
Nathan, they all sort of say it filters, you know, this all filters down to the dressing room, like in your experience.
No.
You don't?
Absolutely not, no. This feels like more of a PR type thing to just give the illusion of, well, I say illusion, but give the idea of competency. You're changing everything. The club isn't what it was because it was so bad. We have to make it seem like everything's changing. But realistically, if you go to a training ground as a player, you see the staff, you see manager, staff, players, you train, you go play in a game, that's it. As long as like your kit's out and everything else is there, what difference does it make in terms of who the CEO is? Like, they're not driving your decisions unless it's arguably something to do with a contract or players coming in. So I don't think that stuff really, nobody cares.
So when you were at City, and so the chairman would be, say, David Bernstein in those days. Mm-hmm. How often did you see David Bernstein?
Did not see David Bernstein.
No.
Did not see David
Have
Bernstein.
Have you ever chatted to David Bernstein?
I've not chatted
to David Bernstein. Bernstein walked into this room now.
I know who he was, yeah, because I'm one
like
of the
a police
older,
doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm one of the older school types, but nah, like, it's irrelevant. And do you know the perspective which I think about sometimes? So you see how commercially United have been doing great or whatever. I wonder if those people, they're all in the boardroom together, patting each other on the back, saying how good a job they're doing.
Undoubtedly so, yeah.
And they look at the field and says, these guys are letting us down, the ones on the field. You know, do you think they're self-aware to believe that they've got anything to do with anything out there? Or is it a case of, like, as I say, they think, oh, you know, I need to have done more to have helped the team?
But so the question is, how much do they have an effect?
Realistically,
yeah.
realistically, and this is like a very, it's a hot opinion for some, because, you know, when I watch, if I watch United on TV, if they win, it's great. Ten Hag's done great. If they lose, like, Neville will talk about, like, the Glazers. You know what I mean? That type of thing. And I hate that, because the two things can be going on at the same time, but then still be very much separate. But they always seem to be linked. And I think they could have maybe put certain people into better leadership positions, but realistically, have the team underperformed? If the answer is yes, then that's down to the people who are in charge of helping them be better.
But City became better when better people were put into leadership positions through that club, right?
But if City, say in the last few years, this year has been more significant because of, say they've had really good players and so on, but Guardiola's been the defining factor for those players. Because if you would have had
he had to have the right people around him. Or are those people only good because they've got Pep with them?
Possibly. And I think for the way that Pep is at City, they allow him the freedom to be able to do his job openly.
Yes.
I think at Bayern, that's a different issue because you've got the legends weighing in all the time. Yeah. But that structure, like the players, they speak to the manager. The manager, if the manager feels comfortable, he'll stay for longer.
Yeah.
But he's the one that creates the vision.
At United, it feels like there isn't enough support from those people, like the execs. Like a manager of Manchester United becomes an isolated figure, which is what Ten Hag feels like now, doesn't he? It's like, it's him in the eye of the storm. There's no one around him.
It's true. And some people prefer that though.
Well, they do, yes. But I mean, Sir Bobby Charlton, we had his funeral this week. That was the factor that kept Alex Ferguson in the job, is that he had Sir Bobby behind him. And
I'm sure.
you need strong characters.
Yeah.
But aren't you saying that the people in the room, you know, slapping each other on the back saying we've got the best noodle partners,
yeah,
and these guys are letting them down. You're saying they do have a point, because they're making lots of money.
Essentially, because in an ideal world, say with the Ratcliffes and so on, they'll want success on the field, but they also want it commercially.
Yeah.
You know, they want both sides of it. But then they're probably going to try and put things in play that they believe will help the football inside. But again, like when you watch that team play for their potential, they're not playing to their best. And how much of that is down to the CEO or certain people in and around it, in my opinion?
How much power, John, do you think Ratcliffe is going to have? Because he's very much going to be a minority shareholder, and I can't see the Glazers ceding too much decision-making power to him.
Yes, that is. I mean, this is, I suppose, that is, you know, something that might happen. Is when does Big Sir Jim and the Glazers, when does the first row happen? But the suggestion is that 25% is the first tranche of him eventually taking over. And that's the way it's supposed to be, but
because as things stand, I believe there's a 12-person board of execs at United, six of whom are
Glazers,
yeah, siblings. And if in the event of a tie,
yeah,
Joel and Avram have the final.
Joel has a casting vote. Yeah, yeah.
So, is that going to change?
Well, I think those are the questions. That's a very good question, Barry. I don't know the answer to that one. But it's something that if this deal is being wrapped up and Richard Arnold's departure suggests it is, those are the details that we're going to have to dig out as journalists, aren't they?
Isn't it a sad state of affairs that we're talking about this?
I'm not zoned out. But
you know, you're not going to spend $1.5 billion to have no say, though, are you? That's the thing.
I would expect something. Because it's going to take me quite a while to rustle that up, if I'm honest. yeah. Chelsea face fresh questions over how former owner Roman Abramovich funded the club's success after leaked files revealed a string of secret payments that may have breached strict football rules, including FFP. Experts said the transactions uncovered through a joint investigation by The Guardian and international partners could lead to the Premier League imposing punishments on Chelsea, such as a deduction of points. The files revealed a series of payments worth tens of millions of pounds over a decade, routed through offshore vehicles belonging to Abramovich. The transactions in question appear to have been for Chelsea's benefit, raising questions about whether they were declared in accounts submitted to football's governing bodies. Do read Rob Davies' piece about this in The Guardian. I think the interesting conversation...
I just don't know what to believe anymore. I mean, this is such a shock to
me.
I've never, ever suspected anything like this was happening. Did you?
Oh, God, no.
God,
No.
It feels like I've just opened my eyes
Well, I think I don't know what a realistic and sensible sanction is, right? But obviously you've got this happening, we've got the City charges happening at the moment. But an interesting conversation, I think, is obviously Man United fans say, get rid of City's titles, right?
Just get rid of City.
And, you know, you know, Tottenham fans or whoever say, strip Chelsea of all their titles. But don't you think actually being stripped of your title would be better than having a points deduction? Because your fans aren't going to care. Like, if you said to a Man City fan, oh, by the way, that Aguero goal now doesn't actually win you the title, they're not going to go, oh, let me just take back all that emotional joy that I had.
Nadim would be delighted because it was all his fault.
Yeah, that's true.
Wow, some of it was. not all of it, yeah. I think that's a good question. That's a good question. I think the points deduction, because say for the City charges, again, like I'm somehow linked with that period as such.
Mm.
And if, say, something was to happen to them and they had points taken off them for this season, like, do I have to go and apologise for something like I had no idea about? You know,
they want
I mean?
To take the points away from when you finish 10th.
Yeah, so exactly. You go down to 13. Yeah, exactly. And it's justified, and people are like, yeah, good, this is what they deserve. And it's, I don't know, it's a strange one. I'm not very good at sort of figuring out what the right sanction is for any particular like incident, but
there isn't really a sanction that's going to affect A, the fact that they've won the trophy and enjoyed themselves. They can't. And taking points off them now, the argument is it's a different regime. It has nothing to do with us.
And in the middle of it, the fans have absolutely no say over any of this, right? But the converse argument is you can't just say, oh, well, we can't put any sanction on a team who is found guilty, because then all the clubs will just carry on doing it, if any clubs are doing it. I just threw my phone on the floor and disgust.
He really cares about this one.
You know, I'm yet to put a cover on the phone, so yeah, lucky. Yeah, you have to have some sort of punishment, right? Otherwise, what happens? But
Or they carry on willy-nilly breaking the rules, which some of them might be doing anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's like if you look at the Tour de France role of honour, there's a big gap between 1995, I think, and 2002, where nobody won the Tour de France. Quite conspicuous, 7 consecutive years where the Tour de France happened.
But you know he won it.
There was, you know, millions of people lying in the street, drinking wine and beer and eating cheese and baguettes, cheering on these cyclists. They're, you know, I remember them vividly. But historically, those tours didn't happen. Nobody won them.
I mean, Juventus had titles stripped, didn't they? And I think their fans are just quite happy to say that was our 35th title, rather than, you know.
Did they give the title to someone else?
I think Inter got one of them, but I think one season no one got one, which because everybody was involved.
I wonder what that's like if you finish second to say City or Chelsea or whatever, and then they have the title stripped. Are you asking to be given that title?
I mean, I'd love it. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, when they go and give a bronze medal to some Jamaican who's like 58, who's going, the moment's gone now. Yeah.
It's sent to them in the post. Yeah, well done. Via DHL. It's not exactly the same as having your moment on the podium in a packed stadium, is it?
But I would like, I think if you were the team, I don't know who came, so Man United came second in 2011 or 2012. I can't remember the Aguero year. Or, I mean, someone who finished second behind Chelsea. Did that squad get together for an open top bus parade? And then you have to get the fans to dress what they were wearing in the sort of early 2000s or whatever. So this is, this is who you are. You've got to go, if you had split from your partner, you've got to get back with them. We all go back to that moment in history. But I think as a fan, you'd actually prefer to have that strip than have a points deduction, right? I don't know.
How big a points deduction are we talking?
Are you relegating
a 30 pointer?
I think you've got to relegate them, haven't you? You know,
points deduction has to hurt.
Yeah.
Say, for example, a club based in the Greater Manchester area facing
Stockport
could be Rochdale.
Yeah.
Say they had 100 plus charges, and some of them stuck. What do you think the other clubs in their division, whatever division that might be, would those other clubs in the division want them to be in the same division of them after, if these charges should be, say, found to be true?
Hypothetically, I think almost better
they
than
relegating.
Say, hypothetically, better than relegating City would to give them a 70-point deduction and see if they survive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, what a season that would be. We're so excited, because they probably would, right?
But
like 60
this season,
point,
yeah.
But don't City fans always talk about the great days when, again, York away, Lincoln away, back to those days.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Chelsea story, right? So, like, hypothetically,
it was just a name we threw in there.
A 60 point, you know, 50 point, you know, I see, maybe they might not make that, might they? Anyway, it's an interesting conversation. As yet, no one's been found guilty yet. David says, where do Cray Valley Paper Mills go from here? Yeah, they lost 6-1 at home to Charlton Athletic in the FA Cup replay. I think they equalised at some point. Or did they take the lead? They equalised, but they lost 6-1. But you know, it's not actually a paper mill anymore. We chatted to their chairman, didn't we, Baz? Mm. Yeah, he was a nice man. That'll do for part two. Part three, we'll do any other business. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Dylan says, how did Naden feel seeing someone older than himself score last week in the Premier League? Thiago Silva scoring a header. Quite a lot older as well, isn't he?
Yeah, considerably older. Yeah. Listen, I'm very much at ease with it. Yeah. I jumped out when I was ready. He can keep going for as long as he wants. Yeah. As long as he wants.
It's like, it's the reverse of, you know, fans going, I realised, you know, it's when a player younger than you scores. But for a footballer, it's a player older than you. It's
yeah. The bigger ones, like James Milner, he's the same age as me, but he's still playing. And like thinking, yeah, probably could have tried a bit more. But instead, you know, I'm here with you guys. So this is obviously the win.
Yeah. Jack says, in light of Petacek signing for the Belfast Giants, does Naden think he could scuff one into an ice hockey net? Yeah, I feel like every international break, Petacek signs as a goalkeeper for an ice hockey team.
He changes clubs a lot, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. He's a journeyman, isn't he? He has joined Belfast Giants on loan from Oxford City Stars as temporary emergency cover. He joined the Guildford Phoenix in end of 2018-19 season, and then he signed for Oxford City from Chelmsford Chieftains, yeah. So he really can't, he just can't stay put,
it's
can
like,
he?
It's like the Mo Johnston.
He's the Wayne Biggins yeah. of ice hockey. Luke says, having been managed by him, can Naden confirm if Harry Redknapp is still with Sandra or if Neil Warnock has swooped in, as Max Rushton seemed to think? I get my Sharon and Sandra's mixed up, don't I?
It's definitely Sharon for Neil, isn't
Sharon
it?
Sharon for Neil, Sandra for Harry. You don't have to answer that one. Liam says, did Andros get the tip of eating chicken feet for marginal gains from Barry, given his lengthy and illustrious career? Is this how Barry makes sure his body recovers after every pod? Or is it his go-to hangover cures? Yeah, Andros revealed he's hoping to lengthen his career by eating chicken feet. Your thoughts, Barry?
Well, we did a live show with Andros's dad, Troy, on Monday. And I didn't see the chicken feed story until Tuesday, so that was an opportunity missed to quiz Troy about his son's chicken feed fetish, I suppose you could call it. I've never eaten chicken feet. I imagine they're really unpleasant. I do see them on sale in Brixton Market, where you can get all sorts of weird and wonderful things. But yeah, I didn't realise they were a delicacy. But
they're like a snack food. I went to Beijing a few years ago, and you know, if you're going to like a WH Smith's, or you know, they're the thing next to the counter.
Oh really?
Yeah,
they're like, so
they're like a sort of, you know, a big bag of Quavers.
Right.
Instead, they'll have chicken feet.
I've had chicken feet before.
Yeah,
it's a bit weird.
Yeah,
it's a bit weird. But
it was interesting what he was saying.
Tastes like chicken.
He was on the Monday Night Club, and he was sort of saying, "Look, you know, he basically caught himself having to take all sorts of supplements and pills, and you know, this for this, and collagen and turmeric and whatever." And he just thought, "Hang on, I want to see if I can get this from natural foods." That's quite a sensible idea, I guess. But it's quite interesting that, I mean, I don't know if you were being given, "Hey, have these magic beans, Naden. It'll, you know, it'll
within
keep
sport.
You happy."
Yeah, give you some magic beans. Yeah, I think for him to be sick and tired of having tablets to then decide to go and hunt for chicken feet, that's a very big step. I'd imagine as he travels around the country and so on, I'd worry if he was concerned that maybe he can't perform well because he's not had his chicken feet in his pre-match meal and so on. But again, I think for me, highlights that he's got some issues, and if it can help him feel better, then great. But again, there's not a long history of people having chicken feet and having their careers extended.
Yeah. Does James Milner have chicken feet?
Do you know what? No, I don't think he does. Okay. I don't think he does. I think good luck to Andros. I hope it works out for him.
Yeah.
But if his knee's bad,
yeah, he said he was feeling great the next day. He's also doing something called mouth taping.
Yeah, right? I've heard about this.
Erling
as well.
Haaland does mouth taping.
How much of it's in your mind? Do you remember years ago, probably 15 years ago, when they had the little power bracelet things with the hologram? That you, do you remember this? A power band bracelet. It was like a rubber bracelet.
Right.
And it had...
is this for footballers or just for people?
This is for life. Right. And it had a hologram within it that used to make you 2% stronger and wow. all this nonsense.
Okay.
Everyone was using it.
Right.
Except for me. But everyone was using it.
I've never even heard of that.
I guarantee you, okay. listeners, if you, people would have bought these because they believed it was going to be a thing. There was big marketing around it. You had cricketers, you had footballers,
yeah.
everyone doing it. One of the most stupid things I've ever heard in yeah. all my life. But people said they felt better because
I remember
of it.
The nose thing.
There was the Vicks Vapor yeah, rub Vicks, on the chest.
Yeah. Yeah, nonsense.
But mouth taping is, I tried to look it up. It sounds quite unpleasant. But it's when you go to sleep. I don't think you tape your mouth sort of wide open like the Aquafresh advert. I'm not really sure. But apparently Erling Haaland does it. It's good for your breathing or some such. Simon says, after listening to Barry profess his love for Olivier Giroud, I was sat at Expectation in Dubai Marina on Tuesday. Egg spectation. Was that a sort of fancy egg shop?
How
fancy
it's like it spud you like for eggs.
It could be. On Tuesday, my wife was staring at someone. I turned around to see this handsome bearded chap with his wife. To my shock, it was Olivier Giroud. I almost fell in love with him. He's a spectacularly good-looking person. That is true. Sean says, hope the live show's going well. Cannot make the Irish shows this year, unfortunately. But last year, I won a big chunk of lamb in Mark Langdon's raffle. I didn't show much excitement at the time. I was there by myself. I did want to highlight the fact that I was there on my own. On my way home, I put the big chunk of lamb inside my jacket and got onto the Lewis Dublin tram line, then drove back to my house in the south of Ireland. So about 4 hours had passed by the time I received the lamb to when it was put into the freezer. I excitedly explained to my girlfriend I won this raffle and that we should have said lamb for dinner this Sunday. I thought this was a soccer podcast. Why are they giving out meat? God, men are so weird when it comes to soccer, she says. Fair. So her mother ended up cooking this lamb the following Sunday with all her family. I did not attend the dinner. Not sure how long that lamb had been out of the chilled area from when ye got it, but every one of her family ended up sick. So a word of advice, maybe leave the meat in a chilled area before each raffle. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Look after Barry when he's back in Ireland. Producer Joel says we do leave the meat in a chilled area. And we only do meat raffles when Mark Langdon's there because otherwise it would be silly. And he's not coming to Ireland, so hopefully we'll be safe. We do hope your family have recovered. Steve says, not a question, just a comment. Listening to Football Weekly during a vasectomy is old news. Listening to Football Weekly during a colonoscopy prep, the new way. Well, look, good luck to you, Steve. Hope you're all right. Which part of the
prep, that's just you.
That's the laxative one, isn't it?
You just sort of sat in the throne room, isn't it?
Yeah, that is... You take the sort of powdery drink and you think, actually, I think I'm feel all right. And then suddenly it goes all Munich.
Full Munich.
It goes full Munich very, very quickly. Alexis says, hi, Max and team. Just thought I'd try and redress the balance of the Football Weekly population after all vasectomy chat to let you know that I'm listening to you while waiting for my wife to have a midwife appointment. It's the second time in the process I've squeezed in a bit of Football Weekly, having had to wait outside for one of the scans. Everything's all good. Hoping for many more Football Weekly pregnancy mashups. Not sure I'll be allowed to make it. It'll be allowed to make it into the birth playlist. Maybe I'll try and play it on a speaker on my wife's stomach. Now they've developed ears. Get them started early on the excellent football chat. She has no interest in football, but her dad once played against Pelé. So I'm hoping it's in the genes. I've listened to every episode as I was looking for a World Cup podcast back in 2006. And there the pod appeared. Who knows how many hours of Barry I've had in my head. Glad the pod is going great guns. Looking forward to another 17 years of listening. Good keepers posted, Alexis. Maybe you could call your little one Barry. And that'll do for today. Thank you so much, Barry.
Thank you, Matt.
Nice to do a pod in person. Thanks, John.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you, Nadim.
Pleasure, sir.
Thanks all of you for doing the live show last night as well. We will see you in Dublin on Monday and Tuesday night, Brighton on Wednesday. Oh, you can still get tickets for the live stream wherever you are on earth, theguardian.com/FWTour23. Football Weekly is produced by Silas Gray with Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens.
This is The Guardian.